Judah Diaz is the author of two short story collections and a novel that won both a Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Critics Circle Award, and was named number one fiction book of the year by Time in 2007. So it's interesting to see what stories he's chosen as the guest editor of the Best American Stories 2016. The collection is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. I'm very pleased it has brought Juno Diaz back to our show. Welcome back.
Leonard, so good to be back. Thank you.
Your short stories have been featured in this series five times, 1996, 97, 99, 2000, 2013, and now you're on the other side of it as the guest editor. Did that feel strange?
Not only did it feel strange, but I have to tell you something, that everyone who's been a guest editor, I never realized not only how much I owe them because of the amount of work this thing required.
Well, do you have to spend months reading literary magazines and short story collection? Or does Heidi Pitlore, who really runs the series, simply send you a bunch and say, you should consider these?
Exactly. What ends up happening is you get like five times more then you could choose, about that. And then they clear the forest, and then you have to sit there and contemplate close to, well, I guess it was over 150 candidates, and you end up living with those 150, at least I did, because I was so neurotic that I was going to miss something.
And how many did you winnow it down to?
You winnow it down to about two dozen. Yeah.
Was there anything specific that you were looking for in these stories? When you look at a short story, are there certain criteria that you have?
It's interesting what ends up happening in a situation where you have a bunch of material to read in a very short time, and then your choices are going to be public. What you end up doing was I started with this operational logic, which was that, this idea that the story I had absolutely kindle and within me a tremendous love, only to realize the exact opposite was I ended up with the stories that I couldn't get rid of. The day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days later, the story was still bothering me.
You say in your introduction that before you began writing short stories, you had always wanted to be a novelist. But did you write short stories first?
No. In fact, I did not write short stories first. In fact, I wrote a couple of very bad novels first.
And some of your mentors and your heroes, your favorite writers, were short story writers.
Yeah, but you know what? It's sort of strange how you don't always, at least I wasn't, I didn't have that kind of instrumental logic. I didn't make the jump that these folks were my gateways to my practice. The novel sort of in my mind was this, the kind of the gold ring. And, I kind of pursued it unthinkingly in a way.
And it's true that publishers always are pushing writers to write novels because, except for some exceptions like Alice Munro and a few others, the novels are what sell.
Well, I think that's generally the sensibility and sort of the market on the ground. Folks you understand that folks have a lot of familiarity and literacy with novels in ways that not all folks feel great comfort in reading an anthology of short stories.
You say your first short story was heavily criticized. It was at a workshop in Ithaca? What were they criticizing?
Well, I mean, first I stank. I mean, I really did stink. I didn't understand the form as well. My characters were absurd and unrealistic and two-dimensional. I mean, I caught a beating. I could still remember, once I sat down across my workshop and when they were about to get started, I suddenly had this wave of nausea when all the defects of my story became suddenly crystal clear. And I already saw what was about to happen. It was like the chronicle of a bashing foretold.
And did that help you in writing the next story, or did it still take some time?
Well, it didn't hurt, but I wouldn't say that there was some miraculous turnaround like in the movies. I had a long learning curve.
And then you say now you're a true believer in the short story. You've also said, my life has always worked better when understood as a collection of short stories.
Certainly. I don't know if I belong to that population of people whose life is unified and coherent. I think as an immigrant, as someone who's lived such weird, strange lives, I always feel more fragmented than whole.
Didn't a publisher offer to publish your first collection of short stories, Drown, as a novel, but you didn't want to do that?
Yeah, again, I sometimes wonder, man, maybe I should have just taken that easy way out and therefore not had the pressure of writing my first novel. And, you know, it could have been done, to be honest, because there was plenty of novels that are less tightly bound than Drown. But I had this idea that Drown was existing in this middle space between a story anthology and a novel, and I liked that.
And some people do linked short stories,
yeah,
kind of like a pseudo-novel.
Sure.
What about a narrator in a short story? You have to decide whether you're going to do first person, second, third, just as you do in a novel. But does the narrator play a different role for you?
You know, what's interesting is that the sort of accumulation of incident, the accumulation of character, the accumulation of world details in a novel can overcome almost anything. In a short story, you don't have a lot of time. And in fact, your narrative persona has to do an enormous amount of work very, very quickly. So I would argue that the narrative persona, whether it is a first person or a third person, if they don't do the required amount of early heavy lifting, you're in serious trouble.
From the first sentence.
First word.
My guest is Juno Diaz, who has edited the latest edition of the Best American Short Stories, this one, 2016. It is published by Mariner in paperback, Harcourt, Houghton Mifflin Harcourt in hardcover.
Yep.
And we will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Juno Diaz, who has guest edited the latest edition of the Best American Short Stories, 2016, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt,
yep,
and then in paperback by their paperback version, Mariner. I guess we shouldn't be surprised to find short stories in this book by well-known writers like Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, Louise Erdrich, Lauren Groff, John Edgar Wideman, Karen Russell, but who are some of the lesser-known authors?
Well, I think what ended up happening is that, for me, is that we had this enormous body of short stories that were incredible.
Are they mostly published in magazines?
Or? Yep, most of them are magazines, literary journals. We had one that was one story that had been published online. And what ended up happening was that really, what's going on with the short story right now is that we're in an extraordinary golden period. That this is among the strongest periods that I've ever seen as far as the story is concerned. It is easy to fill an anthology now with 20, 30 perfect stories. It really is. And that meant that, you know, when you would find new young folks doing these kinds of remarkable work, it would just, you know, just call you immediately because there's so much new ground that's being covered. And it was part of the process of this was really, really exciting, is finding people that you had never heard of before who were doing this kind of weird, strange, and interesting work.
Yalitza Ferreras, Yuko Sakata, Lisa Koh.
Yeah.
Sounds very ethnic.
Well, or not, depending on your point of view.
One of the stories in the collection is The Great Silence by Ted Chiang, and it's written in the perspective of a parrot.
Yeah, and for me, that is one of the great short stories of, in my opinion, one of the great short stories of the decade. Yeah, this final testimony, this final testament, this last message from a species about to be extinguished to the human race that is driving it to extinction. It is profoundly moving.
Well, parrots are smart,
they
it turns out. But didn't you once try to write a story with the voice of a parrot?
No, I wrote a story with a parrot in it.
Ah.
The parrot was the key figure, and believe me, I couldn't touch a feather on Ted Chiang's story.
Death seems to be a common theme in these stories. Characters are struggling with their mortality. In The Prospectors by Karen Russell, Clara and Aubie, two friends, encounter death quite literally.
Yeah, no, that's one of those great Gothic stories. A story I really love, and you know, you can never account for where you are in your sensibility, in your sort of aesthetic criteria, right? And I just got into a gloomy ass mood, or you know, it's been a tough election year. It's easy to think in terminal terms, but I guess those were the things that were speaking most, I think, emphatically to me.
And the last story in the collection is called Williamsburg Bridge. It's by John Edgar Wideman, who I've always thought of as somebody from, Philadelphia. But anyway, that is a really sad story.
It's extraordinary.
He's a wonderful writer.
And that, for me, that story was the bar. When I read that story, I said, well, every other story in this collection has to earn its seat next to this story. And, I mean, it is accomplished at a formalistic level, the sort of emotional honesty, what it excavates out of the meaning of our fragility and of our mortality. All of these things came together in that story perfectly.
Is it the character's cry for help?
Or the cry to mark one's passage through this vast wilderness we call the universe.
Why do you think that John Edgar Wideman decided to end the story when he did?
Mysterious.
Wait, for me, no conclusion.
In fact, that this was part of my enjoyment of the story is how that ending invites you to wrestle with its indeterminacy. And that the one thing with a story that begins the way this story begins is you assume there's going to be a plummet off the bridge. You assume that there's going to be some emphatic finale, but he resists that kind of closure and in fact turns it back onto the reader, and I think a very fascinating way.
And then there's Tamima Aman's story, Garments, which takes place in Bangladesh after the collapse of a garment factory in Dhaka. But that story is about a lot more than just that tragic accident.
Yeah, this was a story that that eluded my immediate sense that, oh, brother, this is going to be one of those issue stories, that this was written too soon after, the basic outlines of the tale were in the news. And in fact, it turns immediately towards that most devastating of all paradigms, the intimate and the strategic intimate. How do we use our connections to each other to either further our lives or in some way to undermine our lives?
When you're reading this wide range of stories, does it at all inspire you to start thinking about some things you might want to write? Because I know a lot of writers will talk about they're reading Joseph Conrad and suddenly a sentence will just set off a spark, one of his magical sentences, and there they are thinking about what they might want to write as a result.
Conrad has a way of doing that. Conrad has a way of doing that.
I didn't mean to invoke him in particular.
But it happened with me. He rests in me in specific ways, so I resonate to that. What was interesting was that when I finished this process, what was most elevated in me was my desire to find more time in my life to read. What this book gave me was a sense of community as a reader, more than it gave me sort of an impetus as a writer. And you know, that first love of mine was always reading. And I think a collection like this, an anthology like this, brings really into clear focus is the gifts that reading gives us. And when you have this cornucopia of offerings, it's hard not to be moved or to resist.
You've talked about wanting to write the Great Dominican novel for quite some time, but wouldn't some argue that you achieved that with The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde?
Well, folks could argue almost anything, but
don't feel like you did it, despite the success of that
book? I don't think so at all. I think that that's the nature of the artist, at least the artists that I most admire, is that our dissatisfaction has no limits.
So You just keep on scratching at it?
Yeah. No, you keep on gnawing. You keep thinking, somehow I'm going to get my teeth through this.
You must have been pleased when they approached you about doing this, because previous guest editors in the series include John Updike, Stephen King, T.C. Boyle, some pretty terrific writers.
I think Heidi will tell you I tried to flee every way possible. Heidi had to cut the ring off like a good boxer to get me, to come in. I felt that it was an enormous responsibility. I dreaded that fear that I had, that I would not, that I would do a disservice to a young writer who had written a wonderful piece, and because of some momentary lapse in logic and in taste, I would not notice her offering. And I think that really kind of spooked me out, but eventually I just came around to, you got to do the best you can.
It's a heavy responsibility. I'm sure there were a few stories that you wished you could have included, but...
Believe me, there's actually two stories that are still on my mind, but it's the way it works.
Meanwhile, you will be appearing at Symphony Space tonight at 7:30 on Broadway and 94th Street. Will that be in connection to this?
Yeah. We're sort of launching the anthology, this year's iteration. We have wonderful actors who will be, in many ways, not just performing, but recreating the experience of the story for our audience. So really, really excited.
Now, do you think that an actor reads your story better than you read your story?
I don't know. I mean, I my sense of it is that we're talking about professionals who know quite a bit about how to use both body and language to make the kinds of connections to audiences that, that's not easy to achieve.
I'm assuming that right now you're at work on something, a novel or a short story?
Supposedly a novel, and the work has gone very, very slow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that typical that it goes slow?
Yeah, but I mean, even in my own snail-like, sort of productivity, these have been very slow times.
But meanwhile, you would have a little break, as I said, at Symphony Space tonight at 7:30 on Broadway and 94th Street. I understand it's sold out, but we have a link on our show page at wmyc.org/lopate where listeners can find out about standby tickets.
Yeah.
So that means a lot of people are excited by short stories because Symphony Space is a fairly large theater.
Well, yeah, that was really, really reaffirming. And I just think the selection of stories that are being presented tonight are just knockouts.
But not all 24.
My God, I only wish. I have the patience for these things, but I think most people would not.
Juno Diaz is the editor, guest editor of the latest The Best American Short Stories. This one, of course, 2016, even though 2016 still has a couple of months ago, I guess it's really 2015.
Exactly.
And he, of course, is the Pulitzer Prize and National Book Critics Circle Award winning novelist behind The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde. It's always a pleasure having you on our show.
Leonard, thank you so much.